Any questions concerning today's message? You can ask now. I didn't receive many questions for tonight, except those which have been given to me earlier. If you have any questions based on tonight's message, you may ask now. Anyone want to ask anything? Okay. You don't want to trouble me, right? This one question that is given to me just now that says, in terms of merciful behavior, do we give money to the beggars on the street, to those that ask us at the train stations for a dollar or two? It's tough, isn't it? Well, not all beggars need help or worthy of help. Because if you give them $2, they may end up taking drugs or drinking beer or doing something wicked. But there are genuinely troubled people. Normally, I think in countries like Singapore and Australia, I don't think there's a need for them to appear in railway station and ask for money. I think government provides sufficient help to them. And if they need help, they can go through proper channels. I think government of these countries have many channels to do that, to help them. So I think many of these people who beg in railway stations and all that, people who abuse the money in sinful habits. This is my perception. Now, this is not a blanket statement about every individual and every beggar in every country, but speaking about in developed countries like Australia and Singapore, that is the case. And so I do not like to give. I had a neighbor an Indian chap, whom I watched drinking many times in hawker centers in Singapore. When we go to eat, I see him ordering beer and drinking glasses of beer and still sit there and, looking at people this way. So I watched this guy. One day when I was about to drive off from the car park, he approached me and asked me for $20. So I asked him, "Why do you want the money for?" "Oh, my mom is very sick and she's very old." He's already 50. I thought his mom already died. But anyway, he says his mom is alive and she's extremely sick and he needs to urgently take her to see the doctor. It's an emergency situation. So I asked for $20. I said, "All right, if your mom is sick, can I come with you? Let me help you to bring her to the doctor instead of just giving you $20. Then he said, "Why is that you don't give me $20? I said, "I've seen you drinking all the time. And I can even smell beer right now. So I don't want to give you that money, but I really want to help you if your mom is sick. Can I come with you to your house?" He just walked away. He's very angry. So in some of these situations, it's better to be wise. But if you try to argue with them, they may give you a punch and walk away. So be careful when you deal with these people. I don't think you need to be very troubled in your heart if you didn't give them something. It's good to consider the situation around and see whether it's wise to give. In Singapore, government discourages us from giving alms to people who meet you along the road, because in Singapore there are plenty of means to get help. They can always approach any charitable organizations and they will look into the matter. They will send social workers immediately and attend to them. So I think some of them are really abusers of themselves and others' property. So try to avoid it. But that's my answer. But if you really think a person is in need and the Lord moves your heart, please give. Yeah, I hope I answered that question. What makes music sacred? What makes music sacred? I think if a music is written for the glory of God, for the praise of His person, His attributes, His truth, then that is sacred. But of course, I'm also aware that there are people who say that my music is sacred because I have the word God in it. I meant this song to be sung in the church. But then everything about the song is very worldly. It reflects worldliness in it. I wouldn't regard it as very sacred. It's not just the words alone that make it sacred. It's the attitude behind it, the purpose of it, the person who wrote it, the persons who sing. All these are matters. You know what? Amazing Grace or Holy, Holy Lord God Almighty can be sung by a drunk without repentance. It doesn't make it sacred. Right? The Lord asks, what right has a wicked to take my name on his lips? And so we got to be careful, sacred in purpose, in content, in intent, and in presentation. Then it will be sacred music. That's a very simple and quick explanation of it. You're so fast, I can't figure you out. I'm sorry. Can you slow down a little bit, please, for my sake? Oh, I see. Music written for the church without lyrics. What would make it sacred then? I also have no idea. I think if you play a tune of a familiar hymn, then I can understand it's a music. Sacred music, because it evokes the memory of the hymn, right? But if you just play a music and call it sacred, which evokes no particular words, I have problem calling it sacred. It may sound like a hymn. It may sound like a hymn. It may be a tune that can be accepted as a legitimate tune for one of the hymns or Christian lyrics. But until you give words to it, I don't know how we can call it sacred. Yeah, so I think I understand where you come from. If you can give some Christian words to it and sing, and then people can remember that tune in that way. You see, music is very powerful. It often evokes in our minds scenes that are attached to that music, right? Let's say if you hear music of a song that was sung in a particular movie, and when you don't have to hear the lyrics, you just hear the tune, the scenes of that movie will suddenly play in your mind, correct? And so we must know music is very powerful, even though you say I've written it for the church, but it is the kind of music that evokes the worldliness and the worldly ways. It's best that we don't call it sacred. We avoid it. Do I make sense? Okay. All right. Any other questions on it? In situations of conflict, is avoidance ever an appropriate measure if two parties cannot or will not resolve the problem peacefully? Now, it all depends what conflict is all about. Let's say Elder Cole found that I'm committing something that is ungodly, something that is not acceptable in the church, and he approaches me to correct me, and I become very angry about him exposing my sin, and then we get into a, you know, I create a scene, and and complain about him as unloving and unkind and critical and nosy about my life and so on. And then a conflict comes about. I think if that's the case, avoidance is not the right way to handle it. He should then get somebody else to talk to me if he can't convict me. And then the whole church got to get involved because I am in sin. I cannot avoid that situation for the fear of conflict. And that's not what Jesus teaches us. But let's say if a person has a bad habit of, you know, bad habit of cracking bad jokes or being a bit harsh with words or too direct about his way of speech, and it troubled us quite often. I think sometimes it's better to avoid confronting that person, because he may not have meant to create trouble. It may be just the way that he is. And there, you must find the right time, a suitable time, and also calmness of your own spirit to talk to him. I still don't think avoidance is, again, the best solution to it. But you may delay, show patience in dealing with that issue. But there can be situations where it's hard to say whether one is wrong or not. For instance, there are two elders here, and one elder wants to paint white here, the other one like light blue, and there are situations like that. And one would say, last year Elder Ko chose the color, this year I choose the color. Why must everybody obey him? I'm also an elder. And then suddenly one group stand up and say, hey, Elder Ko is the first elder, okay? He worked so hard for how many years? 14 years or so. So we love his choice. Then another group says, yeah, that's true. But God gave us another elder also, so that this elder who always assumed leadership now can keep quiet. So he must learn humility. It's good that elders learn humility. So I support the new one. That's how sometimes conflict occurs in church, for things that do not matter. You may think I said something very silly. No! There are divisions in the church because of the paint, color of the paint. I tell you that. Now, in such situations, I think if Elder Ko is mature, he will rise up and say, choose whatever color. Don't leave the Lord, okay? I think it's good to avoid such unnecessary confrontations, if possible. But even in such cases, sometimes somebody has to say something about it. You know, you shouldn't be causing trouble about this, and so on. But anyway, I believe there will be occasions, sometimes avoidance is best. But if it involves sin, unbiblical ways, then avoidance is not the way. All right. Any questions? All right, clear? I suppose so. Could you recommend a good biblical book on explaining or study on the book of Proverbs? Okay, there are many books. Sometimes it's so hard to recommend one without giving you some explanations. Well, there is one published by Tabernacle Books or Pandan BP Church in Singapore, written by Dennis Shelton. It is a compilation of devotions he wrote for RPG. I cannot remember that the name of the book. What is it called? I will try to recall it tomorrow. I'll search the internet. I will be able to find out. And I would like to recommend that if you can get a copy of it. Tabernacles may have, I'm not sure they still have a copy of it. I have a copy at home in my library, and I find it very well written. And if you're not going into study of Hebrew and grammatical matters, that's an excellent exposition with good application. And I find it very useful. And that's one book I would readily recommend to you. Then Reverend Timothy Toh has written a very simple explanation of Proverbs. Very simple, down to earth, easily understandable, small book called Pearls of Great Wisdom. I think it's still available in FEBC book room. You can write to them or email and they will be able to make it available. These two books are available within our BP circle and they're good. And then I think Wiersbe has written a book. Warren Wiersbe has written a commentary on Proverbs. That's quite a good commentary and I can recommend it without much difficulty. So that's a good book to read. If you find Banner of Truth publications and some of the old Geneva series commentaries, and if you find one on Proverbs, please buy it. Excellent exposition of Proverbs. So these are some recommendations. Okay. If you go into Banner of Truth publications on the internet, I'm sure you will find some very good commentaries there. They are very reliable. Now, Proverbs 16:9, is the man a Christian or a general man? Let's check that. Proverbs chapter 16:9. I think I should be stopping soon, right? Time is quite late. Okay, Proverbs 16:9. I will answer one more and then we stop. Proverbs 16:9. All right. A man's heart deviseth his way, but the Lord directeth his steps. Okay. No, it's not necessarily a Christian's heart. Definitely includes Christian's heart. It can be any man. For that matter, yeah. Even when a man rebels against God, God will not allow him to completely destroy God's plan. So even though he rebels, that rebellion can be turned by God ultimately for his glory. For instance, Judas Iscariot plotted against Christ, but it only worked out God's ultimate plan for our salvation. So a man may devise his own plans, but God knows how to turn it around for his glory, right? But it has a very special application for Christian in that we can also believe at the same time, sometimes we may grow wrong or somebody might do something wrong against us, but the Lord will turn it for his glory and our good. One classic example of it is Joseph, Jacob's second last son, when he was hated and sold away by his brothers. He loved the Lord, he served the Lord. He was later thrown into the dungeon because he remained faithful to his master Potiphar, even though Potiphar's wife wanted to sleep with him or take advantage of him. And he resisted. As a result, he was falsely accused. He ended up in the dungeon. And finally, when he met his brothers who sold him, he said to them, "You did evil to me, but God had meant it for our good." And so we know that sometimes people may do very harsh and nasty things against us, but if we trust the Lord, somehow the Lord will turn it around for our good. So the word man here can be applied in a general sense. And it has its application for Christians as well. Okay, the last question. How does God blame intellectuals who use their God-given minds to reason unto unbelief? Oh, this is a difficult question. How does God blame intellectuals who use their God-given mind to reason unto unbelief? I have a little bit of difficulty understanding what's the intent. Can the person who wrote to this explain a little further? I don't know who wrote this. Yes, I got it. So they reason against God because God gave them an intellectual mind. So how can God blame him? Okay. Well, God doesn't... You see, it all goes back to God's creation, actually. When God created us, or when God created Adam and Eve, he gave all the abilities. But God has not given that to cause them to sin. God's purpose was of giving all these abilities so that man might glorify God. You know, we have this question, which is a summary of the biblical teaching in Westminster Confession of Faith. What's the chief end of man? It is to glorify God. And so, what happens when an intelligent man who has God-given ability to think well uses his ability against God in, you know, for his arguments, he is abusing the God-given ability. It is like God created Lucifer with extraordinary abilities as the anointed cherub. He was to be the guardian of God's glory, he is to be the leader of the worship team in heaven, surrounding the throne, is the anointed cherub. And that he used his extraordinary abilities to plot against God as though he can somehow become God, which resulted in his banishment from heaven. And so, in all this we know God did not give them the ability to go against. It's the abuse of things. So when God deals with them, God deals with them for the abuse of God-given abilities against God. And that's how I see it. Yes. Yes. Definitely every man has a conscience of God. Against it. Yeah. Of course it will go further into philosophical argument if I'm answering a person who wants to debate with me on this, you know. It never ends. They will say, if God didn't give me the intellectual ability, I wouldn't argue. It's only because he gave me the intellectual ability. I didn't ask for it. I didn't create my intellectual ability. God gave it to me. So it's his fault. No. I have nothing to say. If you think of God as a person with evil intent and evil purpose, and if you blame God for creating these things, then I have nothing to argue with you. Because your understanding, your presupposition is already faulty. I cannot argue with a person who has wrong premises, wrong presuppositions. So I will leave that man and say, may the Lord help you to see the truth. That's all I can say. There are some questions people go around and around. And some people use philosophical argument to answer these questions. For example, if you were to say, no pen, what does that mean? There was a pen and that's why you say there's no pen. So if you say there is no God, that means there's a God. So you say no God. Now these are philosophical way of arguing things, you know. It goes round and round and round and you never find an answer. It all keep on going. I don't like this kind of arguments. I'm not very keen about such arguments. They call it apologetics, Christian philosophy, but I prefer to go biblical way, expound the Bible. Faith cometh by hearing, and so I preach the word. The Lord gives me grace to preach, and that's all I can say. Because Christian faith is not a device, it's not the product of human thinking. Christian faith is God revealed. his mind to us. Most religions are creation of human thinking, human philosophy, whereas Christian faith is God's revelation to us. It's all about this. And so I don't believe in defending Christian faith through philosophy. It can only confuse us at the end. And so I go by the word. So that's my answer. Right. Thank you. Good night. Sorry. Father, once again we give you thanks as we return to our homes. Grant us safe journey home. Thank you for the love of thy people, for thy truth, and for giving them the grace to sit here, even though some of us are weak in our body. And may you grant us a safe journey home, and may your presence go with us. Now may the grace, peace, and love of our triune God abide with us till we meet again. Amen.